So this is, tell me when to start.
3, 2, 1, go.
All right, Good Life Housing Partners. This is a in-between episode, so we'll call this episode 141. We're in the house with Omar Moe and his team doing a recording on our new podcast studios at the Good Life headquarters. Today is Thursday, March 7th, 2024, and we're going to do a little episode with Mr. David Fong. Mr. David Fong, I know we recorded on Monday, but here we are on a sunny Thursday.
Yeah, sunny Thursday. It's raining.
Not bad.
In Texas, I heard. It's a little bit of a tempest.
Yes.
But welcome Omar and company to our offices.
Yeah.
To Good Life Sound Studios.
Yes. Yeah. Welcome to the new sound studios here. Well, we did an episode just earlier this week, but since then, anything happened in the real estate world that come to mind? I saw New York Community Bank.
New York Community Bank, I think, got some kind of a...
They got a bailout.
But
I didn't read what exactly happened.
Steve Mnuchin?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get the name wrong. Former Treasury Secretary.
Oh, Steve Mnuchin. Yeah.
And so I don't know the details of it, but I did see some headlines about it being a game changer or some kind of blockbuster bailout or something.
Well,
so I don't know exactly what he did, though.
I know the basics were that they were down like almost 50-60% in just like a few hours. And then they halted trading. And then Steve came in and bailed them out. And then they started rising back up. And I think a lot of it, I don't know exactly, but I think some of it was based on where their positions were in their real estate holdings.
Correct. I think it went down because there was something, I don't know the technical details of it, there was something about, they admitted that there was some issue with their controls. Internal controls.
That makes sense.
And that sparked like a little panic, and then the CEO got replaced, basically.
Got it.
By, I think, the former CEO chairman, and he came back out of retirement to take over. So it was, it had spooked the market so much, and their stock had plunged so much, and they needed basically to come in and try to rescue, right the ship. But it was still falling. And I think part of it is also because they have a lot of the real estate loans that are with office tenants, and also I think
like Signature.
Stabilized. Yeah, basically they bought the Signature portfolio. And so and now Mnuchin has, I guess he feels there's value there.
Cause I'm sure there is.
He's a pretty smart guy. I think he's ex-Goldman Sachs guy, so he wouldn't be drawing in bad money after good money. So there's some opportunity there.
So New York Community has secured a significant financial lifeline of over $1 billion in fresh capital and announced the addition of new board members, including former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, amidst concerns over real estate loan losses and weak internal controls. The bank's stock experienced extreme volatility, driving more than 40% prior, so 40% drop, but surging after the news of the capital infusion. And addresses NYCB's liquidity issues and regulatory scrutiny following its acquisitions, with expectations of further challenges ahead due to uncertain macroeconomic conditions and deteriorating asset quality.
Yeah, I guess it's just an example of showing how, like, when there's some bad news, like bad rumor, they can really just, create a mass exodus.
Especially around banks.
Yeah, banks and
I mean, we're a year
loans.
Removed from S&B, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that people are ultra sensitive to banks that have systemic problems or like faulty, a faulty sort of makeup, like, and so this sort of seemed to probably have mirror some of what SNB had, Silicon National Bank had a year just ago, SVB had a year ago.
It's interesting about controls too, because the other article I just saw, again, just a headline, I haven't really dug too deep into it, was I guess Powell, Fed Chairman Powell, was giving some comments about there's this new regulation, Basel III, or some implementation of some banking regulation. And apparently the banking industry is very opposed to it. And at a macro level, it basically has to do with how much more capital banks need to reserve against loan losses, like real estate loan losses. And it requires a lot more capital. In addition, there's some nuances about, like, say a borrower has an asset that's like an office asset. We talk about how the office building market is so troubled, they may have a risky loan there, but if that borrower also has an apartment loan, somewhere else in the city or in another city, you're supposed to lump the two liabilities and reserve against losses on both assets. And, because of that, it's, the real estate banking industry is up in arms. And someone mentioned, but I don't remember seeing it, but you might know, that they actually even took out an ad against this Basel III thing during the Super Bowl recently.
And so
I missed that. But so there's a lot of anger against it. And it's interesting because Powell made a statement about how, like, we're you know, it was out for public comment, and the comment was not good. And he made a comment about how, like, we're really going to, like, we're reviewing, we're trying to rewrite this, and, yeah, we may do some material revisions to this requirement.
Yeah.
So they're reacting. But it also kind of underlies, like, you know, these banks are very worried about having to put up more capital loans, and this implies that maybe some, you know, when you look under the hood at some of these other banks, that there might be more trouble there.
Yeah.
You know.
I think a lot of it, too, is like a lot of what happened last year between Silicon Valley, First Republic, and then Signature, you know, where you had these, you know, pretty massive failures. And I think you would have had more if the Fed hadn't started backstopping some of the other ones that were going to start failing.
Yeah.
And I think there's still a real concern that there is real systemic and controlling issues in these banks, like you're saying.
Yeah, there's still a lot internal of issues. Yeah. Still a lot of losses that haven't been realized
or
surface yet.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to, you know, the question that a number of people continue to ask, and we had a call just yesterday with a number of our investors, is, you know, when will we start to see all this distress in the real estate markets? And the reality of it is that this is part of the overall. It's not a problem. I mean, it is a problem, but it's not because it hasn't been realized yet. And that's where the issue is sitting. Because the banks are reluctant to take back those assets because they're not going to operate them any better than the sponsor or the borrower, what's the point? You're not going to sell it any better. You're not going to operate any better. And unless there's real negligence or criminal fraud activity, things that we talked about earlier, like Oceanwide, where somebody just gives up because they can't develop the project anymore. For most of these, it's just, we're just waiting till interest rates go down to where we are in a better environment, and then we can figure out our exit, or then we can take the keys back. But taking it back now, what's the point? What did we achieve? We just actually have now stopped our lending ability. We've, like, further decreased how much we can actually lend out, how much money we can make. And we've taken on a problem that really we're no better at handling.
Yeah. And I think it's a problem that'll feed on itself, because if the banks then have to take more losses and they reserve more capital against more losses, excuse me, then they're going to not lend less.
Yes.
With less capital to lend.
It's a vicious cycle. You're right. It's a really vicious cycle from that standpoint where you're, you know, where they take back assets because they're getting, I would actually look at it a different way. Until banks are forced to take back assets because of borrower negligence or borrower, you know, unable to operate the assets, or there's some sort of federal mandate to take the assets back, I think we're going to continue on this cycle for foreseeably a long time. Because it's not in the bank's self-interest to take any of this stuff back.
Yeah, and then the bank is also playing this tricky game of, you know, we got to be careful. Any spark, like with New York Bancorp, that they can cause a run on the bank. Yeah. That's the biggest, you know, that's what makes bankers not sleep at night.
Yes. And then the other side of it, too, is, you know, in the majority of these cases, I'm saying the majority, they're, most of the time the borrower is actually making the loan payments and staying in front of their mortgage. The problem is starting to happen, and it's starting where the borrower is no longer making those payments. And they're looking to either exit, or in certain cases, like some of the larger funds like Brookfield and Blackstone, have just said, literally, here are the keys back. We will take this as a complete loss. You figure it out. And even in those cases, the banks have gone back and said they've taken the keys back and stood tall for a moment and then realized that this isn't worth it. Here are the keys actually back to you. Why don't you just keep going? Because we're not going to do any better than you're going to do. It's better you just take your management fee and keep operating this building. This office building is much better in your hands than our hands. And so until there's like some mega event, which could be coming, there is a very strong possibility. And I don't think it's like in the near term. We're not talking in the next few months. But as these office buildings, as these leases expire, and as the revenue on these buildings continues to decrease, most of these office buildings are not owned by General America. They are owned by General America, but it's removed ownership in the sense that it's the Teachers Union of Ohio that has a 20% stake in an office building in downtown Los Angeles that is now gone from being 80% occupied, which is full occupancy in Los Angeles, to now 20% occupied and maybe physically occupied at less than 10. And yeah. then once that revenue starts decreasing, and the pinch really becomes when that dividend starts shrinking. Hey, we can't pay dividends this quarter. We can't pay dividends this year. We can't pay dividends next year. And those write-offs start happening. That's when you're going to need to see something on a federal level that protects the Ohio Teachers Union.
Yeah, I was going to say, and those teachers unions either own it directly or they own it through Blackstone or Brookfield or some REIT or some entity. And so at some point, they're going to be in trouble because it gets political, right? Because the pensions aren't
representing poor teachers.
Teachers.
What are you doing to the teachers,
and
so, bro?
And then as fiduciaries, they're like, what am I going to do with this asset? I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I put all your good, your you know, retirement money into this asset, yeah. and now we're in trouble.
Yeah. What are we going to do? The fourth grade teacher's going to bail us out? Like, what are we going to do here? Yeah.
There was also another guy. I don't remember who. It's probably in the news somewhere. I saw someone else just gave back some big project.
In L.A.?
I don't know if it was L.A., it was someone big, like a major real estate
developer.
Not Hines, but I'm saying like a big name in real estate. Some guy, just, it was like a $1 billion give back. I just saw like yesterday. Basically, to the lender, take the keys back. I'm writing this down to zero, forgetting which one.
Interesting. An office?
I think it was an office.
Yes. Or mixed use or something?
I think it was office. It was office.
Might be Hines. Might be Hines.
And then you know, like you talked about Powell.
Woo!
That's one of our partners, but no.
That's a give back?
The rates actually have improved.
That's in D.C., Metropolitan Square?
I'm just trying to see the relevancy. Did this happen in the last...
Like
it's
last
recent. This
two,
is recent.
2 days or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, a few days.
Okay, so super recent.
Super recent.
I see... Paramount could return.
Here's some
Paramount.
Music from your
I think
library.
It might be Paramount.
Paramount? Yeah, it says Paramount.
What'd they get back?
Could return two downtown San Francisco office buildings to lenders as maturity dates loom.
I think it's them. I think they gave it back.
I think they gave that back, yeah.
And it was almost $1 billion or something like that. Or it was previously at some point valued at $1 billion, and now it's amazing when you think about it. Billion to zero. It's a pretty big
crazy.
Swing.
But I think a lot of times that, like, you know, we look at that and imagine, like, with just what you're saying, like, how is it worth, you know, literally it was 9 zeros or 10 zeros, and you just handed that back. And how did we go to such a low number? But I think from a fund perspective, the way they look at it is the way we look at, like, dirty laundry. As long as that laundry's sitting in your laundry room or in your bedroom, it's, like, messing up the whole vibe. So you're, like, messing up the whole fund with this, like, one deal. Yeah. You're, like, all your resources are to that fund, all your stuff is there, and you got to get, like, you got to clean that laundry out. You got to, you know, make the bed back up again until it's lying there, you can't do it. Yeah. And so while for us it's like, Jesus, that's, like, so many zeros, for the funds, they're just like, you know what, we're going to make this up over here and over there. We just can't keep putting resources to this anymore. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And we have, so that's how they look
like
at it.
It's like what's being efficient. The other example, we talked about this actually on one of our earlier podcasts, was Howard Hughes Center here in West LA. There's a big office component. Remember, Universal Studios used to have a big corporate office there.
And well, this is the one on the west side.
On the west side, yes. Yeah. And it's the west side, right by the 405 freeway.
Great location, actually.
Yeah, great location. There's also a very famous shopping center there, Howard Hughes Promenade.
I don't know how famous that is, by the way.
Famous for LA. And, you know, Blackstone bought it all, sold off the retail, but had the office. I didn't realize it had the office. And early this year, and we talked about it in one of our early podcasts, they wrote it down to zero. And
which was surprising.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, they really just wrote it down to zero. And they previously came in for a few $100 million. But the basic, you know, press release and everything was, and rationale was, doesn't make sense for us. We're writing it down to zero. Our capital can be better deployed. We think we can make much better home run returns on student housing, logistics, and industrial. And that's where we're going to spend it's really time. We're going to spend our time allocation.
Yeah.
If there's a smart guy who could figure this out,
yeah.
Now that it's written to zero and the banks take it back, you know, more power to them. Yeah. We're Blackstone.
But you know what's crazy about that deal, and we'll end on this because we're going to keep it really short, is if you look back on that deal, from a real estate perspective, it has office, it's apartments, it's got pretty good retail, it's somewhat walkable, it's right next to the 405 freeway. And what's most alarming about that deal And I think this must have given, it must have been really hard for Blackstone, because just 3-4 miles from there is what's, you know, outside of Mamie, Miami, and parts of New York, is probably the hottest, best office sector in the West Coast, and one of the best in the country,
which is Century City,
which is only a few miles from there. And it has relatively the same stuff. In fact, the freeway access at Howard Hughes is much better than it is at Century City.
Yeah, you have to drive a little bit.
And you're interior there. But there's some fundamental issues, which I don't fully see. I'm not a little confused as to what. I don't think the retail's as good. I don't think the walkability's as good. I think it's a little too close to the freeways. It's not next to like some of like the finest, most expensive golf courses in the country happen to be in close proximity there. But outside of that, it's hard to say what makes those things so different to make Blackstone say, this is a give the keys back moment.
They're definitely different, and one in Century City is much better close to the golf courses.
It's nicer,
as you say. The shopping center, Westfield Mall,
I forget what it's called. It had a $250 million review.
Rebuilt, and it's amazing walk lifestyle, outdoor lifestyle shopping center. So much better, but not so much that one would be zero.
And
one
would be multiple billions.
Yeah.
Literally. And it's not like, in my personal opinion, I think Century City is great. It's a good office environment, but it's not that great. Like, it's not like I would much rather be in parts of like Midtown Manhattan or like in by Rockefeller, you know, by Grand Central Station, being in Vanderbilt or like one of these areas. There's much more like a much greater atmosphere there than anything that Century City can offer.
Yeah, Century City is definitely is more of a kind of in some ways like Irvine, a little more suburban.
Yes, it's much more Irvine.
And coming from New York City, which is where I grew up, the deeper urban, you're talking about Manhattan, like downtown is much more like an urban
energy city. Like,
it's just our downtown, like San Francisco downtown, is
well, we're not bad. San Francisco,
out.
We're close.
But we've emptied out.
We're on our way there.
We've had homeless issues and things. I remember too, just from a commuting standpoint for me, it's actually downtown LA is actually further away from a mileage distance from where I live in the South Bay, Manhattan Beach. Versus drive, you know, it's a lot closer to drive to Century City.
Yeah.
But the traffic, too,
is
a lot worse going to Century City because the West Side traffic and the 405.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so crazy that, like, because Howard Hughes Center is actually, like...
Halfway there.
It's not half, but it's closer. And every mile there, like, literally every mile as you're commuting up that... on that West Side traffic is like 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes per mile.
Oh, more than that.
So it's like, it's pretty intense. And so you would think Howard Hughes could have worked. So, and Blackstone's a sharp group. They looked at it and they said, this is a write-off.
Yeah.
So but fundamentally, you look at it and you're like, that seems like okay.
It should be okay.
But it's not. Something is off. So anyways, that does it for us, folks. This was a mini episode, 141. We'll catch you guys next week for 142. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Thanks for jumping on. And this is us on camera.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Thanks for joining us at the studio. Goodbye.
Yeah, the studio, the podcast studio, baby.